You wills, that was perfect. I want to tell you where I am right now. I am realizing that I feel like I could use a nap. Has that ever happened to you? I was really like ready to go, and then I sat down and I was, oh wow, that's lovely. So I'm going to try and wake up for this. But I wanted to take us, I have a story today. It's story time again. And this story, it comes from God's heart to you, but it comes from my heart to you. I'm connected to this story. This story might trigger you. You know that word that flows around everywhere. It might bring up something in you that's uncomfortable. It might comfort you. It might disrupt something you think. Or it might emphasize something you know. And that's how story is, isn't it? It's interactive. It's us interacting together. So I want us to do that. And I want to take the exercise Peter did and go a little deeper with it. If you were in my counseling office and I were to ask you where you are right now and what you're feeling, I would be looking for something very specific, similar to what Peter was talking about. Do you have anxiety? Are you stressed and worried? Right now, the world is an enormous wound. And we can't seem to get away from it. It seems like every time I look at the news, there's another thing and another thing. And right now, our country is an enormous wound. And it feels like our country is just, we're just ripping at it all the time. And it's possible that you have an enormous wound. Or maybe even a small, what someone might call a smaller wound that is very enormous for you. It's bleeding. Maybe your job isn't stable. Maybe your family relationships are difficult and you feel alone. Maybe you're like me and you have an endless to-do list that you feel like you just don't have the capability of getting on top of. And it makes you start to doubt yourself. And I want to do a little exercise with you. I'm going to give you a gift for this. And this gift is going to take us into our story. So trust me. And trust me when I say I'm not going to take us too far into those feelings I just listed. Just far enough to taste it. And then I'm going to offer you something to balance it with. So when someone comes into my office, I do something that might be a little uncomfortable for you, but hang with me. I ask, where do you feel that anxiety, that sadness, that fear in your body? And inevitably, the person across from me is like, what do you mean? That's weird. And some people actually have heard that a lot. It's kind of common in the language these days. But I want to tell you what that is. And then I want to take you back and forth between that feeling and another feeling in your body. So in order to go towards what's hard, we need to be able to just dip our toe in, and then we need to be able to go back over to something hopeful and strong in us. So when I say, where do you feel that in your body? What I mean by that is when things happen to us in our life, we often have an immediate bodily reaction. It's automatic. It's not anything we've thought through or decided to add on. It's our body trying to protect us. One of the common ones is we brace. And you can imagine what happens if you're bracing and it stays there. In fact, I always look at photos of myself, and for a while, there was a time in my life where all the photos, I was like, hi, because, oh, that anxiety, that stress is right there. And what we want to do is we want to notice that and we want to breathe towards that right now. So I want to invite you to take a moment and those things that Peter listed in that prayer and maybe some of the worries I mentioned that you might have, I just want you to take a moment and go a step deeper with his question and ask yourself where you feel that in your body. Just notice. Maybe your stomach hurts. Maybe your shoulders are tight. Maybe you're numb. That's a feeling in your body. And take a big breath. When you do that, I want you to notice, does that feeling in your body get larger or smaller? No right answer there. It could go either way. Does the feeling get bigger, or does it kind of go down now that you're paying attention to it? And here's the gift. If it goes up, one of the things that we need in that moment is a resource, something to help us address that feeling in us. And I, usually with clients, we work to find that in our bodies. Where do you feel strong? In your feet, in your hands, where in your heart, where do you feel strength? And I want to recognize today that because we're coming where we are, I want to offer you a source of strength. And I'm going to play a song for you. This is from the Xhosa language, I think that's how you pronounce it, X-H-O-S-A, of South Africa. And this song, I was one day scrolling through social media and feeling the burden of all the news, and this song came through my feed. And I won't tell you what I did with it because I want you to experience it. So I want you to experience this song, and I want you to notice what happens in your body relative to, because you're not going to understand the words, which is super cool, so it's going to help with that, noticing your body. What happens in your body, what you see on the faces of the people who are singing and what that does to you. And just be really present with your experience. Okay. Okay, if you want to, I'm going to ask if you would maybe speak out a word of what you felt internally when you heard that song. And if nobody says anything, I'll tell you what I felt. So don't worry. No stress. What? Harmony. Oh, doesn't harmony feel good? Where do you notice harmony in your body? Where does that... Can anybody describe that? I always feel it right here. Like almost an opening. Kathy's going like this. Yeah. Yeah, what else did you notice? Calm, somebody said? Beautiful. Yeah. What was the other one? Joy. Oh my gosh. Their faces, just so much joy. Yes. Oh my gosh, yes. When I was going through the social media, immediate like tears and relief. Like somebody was saying, it's all covered. Yeah, yeah. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, everyone's, you know, there, multi-generational, multi-gender, yes. And if you could hear it closely, in the background, you can hear this little girl's mom crying while she's listening to it. Ah! I cried thinking about this all the way here today, so we'll see how we get through this today. Maybe part of feeling like a nap is you're also emotional, I don't know. Yes. So let's take that. Actually, I wanted to ask you before I go on. When you look back over to that place in you felt earlier, with the anxiety, with the distress, what do you notice? So we're doing something called pendulating. We're going from the distress to the strength to the distress again and checking back in with it. So I'm going to invite you to check back in with that place in your shoulder, that pain in your stomach, that feeling in your chest, and just notice, what that song offers that. Just take a second. You don't have to shout that one out. And I'm going to do that, and I'm just going to let my shoulders fall a bit because I tend to do this in all the pictures. So we're going to go like this. That relief, that peace. Okay, so let's enter our story knowing that. So our story today is a story that takes place in Genesis. And one of the cool things about Genesis is that it was written in a very in the manner of ancient writing. And one of the things they did was they structured it a certain way. And it's called a chiastic structure. It's used frequently in Genesis. And I'm going to give you my chiastic structure for dummies perspective because I don't understand it very well. But what I do know of it was enough to encourage me about this story. So a chiastic structure, we're going to put a picture of my notes up here because I also, in addition to not knowing how to do chiastic structure, talk too much about chiastic structure, I also don't know how to put it into my computer. But what a chiastic structure is that the storyteller will often emphasize a story by putting matching stories on either side of the chapters around it. So if we're looking at this one, we have the story, our story today, which is the story of Hagar and Ishmael. And if you look at the chapter before and the chapter after, they mirror each other. And then you look at the chapter after that and the chapter before, the one before and the one after, and it mirrors each other. So you can see that there. I probably need to read it to you because, or at least a couple of them, because it's hard to see my writing, but I'm looking for them. So the first thing you'll see on each side of Hagar's story is a covenant. So the chapter before the story of Hagar was the story of the covenant, where Abraham was told by God to cut the animals for sacrifice in half and put the animals on two sides. And the Spirit of God, in the form of a fire and smoke, walked through it, making a covenant with Abraham that his descendants would be innumerable and that he would receive land and that he would be the father of nations. And then on the other side of that structure, so after the story of Hagar, we have the story of the covenant of circumcision. Then on the other side before that story about the separation of the animals, we have the separation from Lot. Lot was Abraham's nephew, and he was like, I'm going to go a different way. So he went to his own area to live. On the other side, after the covenant of circumcision, we have Lot and the story of Sodom. And also with that comes the story of the three men who visited Abraham. And you can see it keeps moving that way. Now, this structure pops up in Genesis a lot of places. And so what it does is it's a way for the storyteller to say, this is important. This story at the top is important. And I was looking, and I think you could actually move the structure over a little bit sometimes and have it be the covenant of circumcision is important. You know, it just kind of, it's a moving target from what I understand. So with that knowledge, I want to tell you that today our story of Hagar is so important. And I want to invite you into it with me. So let's look here at the beginning of the story. We've just heard that Abraham was promised that he would have descendants, a multitude of descendants. And Abraham had a hard time trusting that one. And so he kind of, in his mind, he was like, well, maybe Lot could be that. And then Lot moved away. And then he even asked, maybe my servant could be that. I could give my inheritance to him. And Sarai, his wife, so it was Abram and Sarai at the time, she took it a step further. She said, look, I'm going to make this happen. This is ridiculous. We're really old. I'm making this happen. And so she took her slave, Hagar, and she said, I want you to take her to your tent and marry her and have a child by her, and we'll just take care of this inheritance thing right now. And so Hagar, who was a slave, triggering part of the story, right? How horrible. She was taken from her family in Egypt and was enslaved. We don't know what life was like for her. We don't know what this decision felt like for her, but as I'm thinking about it, it sounds pretty bad. And she didn't have a choice. And so here she was, given over to Abram, and soon she conceived and was pregnant with a son. And when Sarah saw that, she began to have some contempt. She felt contempt, actually, from Hagar, which I can imagine. Hagar's thinking, you know, I have a kid, and she doesn't. And Sarai took that very personally, and she was very, very hard on Hagar. We don't know what that looked like. We just know she was hard enough that Hagar ran away. We don't know if she beat her, if she yelled at her, if she gave her extra work. We don't know the nature of it, but we know that Hagar felt the need to escape, and she ran away. And she ran into the wilderness, but also right to a well. And wells have been kind of on our list for the last while as we study John, haven't they? The wells and the fountain of living water. And she had no idea what was about to happen at this well. And as she cried and wept, same thing, at this well, and was so lost here, someone appeared. And that someone is, it's really cool. In the Bible, they call him the angel of the Lord. And many people, including myself, believe that that's Jesus. And so Jesus appeared, and he looked at Hagar and he said, Hagar, where did you come from and where are you going? And Hagar looked up and there he was. Let's look at that right in the story. Genesis 16. And the angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone, and everyone's hand against him, and he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen. Now, I left out an important point before this. Right before this, Jesus said to Hagar, Hagar, I want you to go back to the employment of Sarai. I want you to go back to her. And I want you to trust me that I am making of you a great nation, of your descendants. And so Hagar then hears this, that you're going to have a son and you're going to name him Ishmael. The name Hagar means stranger or one fleeing. The name Ishmael means God hears. God hears. So God gave her a name for himself in that moment. And Hagar reciprocates with a name for God. Now, I want you to know how significant this is. Abraham has heard the voice of God several times, but he has not seen God. Hagar is the first person to see God and the first person to name God outside of God. And she names him this way. She says, you are the God of seeing. Truly here I have seen him who looks after me. And in that moment, that well received a name as well. The well she was beside received the name Beer Lahai Roy. You are the God who sees. So I think so much about what does it mean to be seen right where we are. And I think one of the things I love about the stories of Jesus is that he's always coming to us to that place of fear and worry and loss. And he's with us. He's present with us. It's like, I've told this before, it's like he has one foot in the pain with us and one foot somewhere else, which we'll get to in a little later part of the story. So he doesn't necessarily in that moment always fix it. In fact, he told her, you need to go back and you need to have this baby because this is important. And you need to trust me and the larger story that I'm telling. And so he's with her in the pain, and he is also holding something else true at the same time. Have you ever had somebody be with you in your pain? I know that it's really, really tempting for us when our friends are in pain or our family members are in pain to attempt to fix it for lots of reasons. One, it's really difficult for us to feel it with them because we don't like the feeling either. Kind of why we kind of went to those places at the beginning, noticed what they do in our bodies, how we feel, how we respond to them, how the weight of the world is impacting us, how the weight of our friends is impacting us. And Jesus was able always to be with people there, knowing that something more was happening and not fixing that in the moment. Now, if we can fix it, it's important to help when we can. It's important to speak up when we can. But ultimately, if we are with someone in their pain, our presence with them ends up creating a shift. The fact that they are seen ends up being a part of what shifts the story for them. So you might have a friend who's depressed, and you might be like, have you tried fish oil? It's not a bad thing, fish oil. Or have you done some medication? Or maybe you need to try the box breathing where you breathe in and you breathe out and you breathe in and you breathe out. And if you do that enough times, it might help. Or let's go back and look at your early story and see all the ways that it was impacted here. And let's get you moving this way. No, those are all great things. But until someone has been seen where they are, those things don't matter. Until they know we know what they're feeling, either we ask them and we get present with it, or we stay with the feeling with them, they can't have the shift that comes next. And do you see what the shift was that came next for Hagar? When Jesus saw her, suddenly she saw him. And when she saw him, everything shifted. When she saw love, her story shifted. Now, some things happened afterwards that you could say were great and not so great if you're Hagar. Abraham gets visited by three men. And the three men tell him in his tent, hey, Sarah is going to have a son. And Sarah was in the back of the tent. I don't know how those are worked out, you know, if there was a, what do you call those, a drape in the way, a veil maybe. She was back behind there and she laughed. And she laughed and laughed, and the men said, why are you laughing? And she was like, this is impossible. I'm really old. And so is Abraham. And they said, no, no, this is going to happen. I want you to believe. And so then there were some events with Sodom that happened with those three men. We're not talking about those today. But what's important to notice is that Sarah soon became pregnant. And she then had a baby. And she named him Isaac, which means laughter. And I want to share with you something about what the significance of all these names are for me as I read this story. So We have the God who hears first and comes, the God who sees, that's another name. The God who hears is Ishmael, the God who sees is the name given to God, and then another name enters the story, laughter. And laughter has such wonderful connotations to me. As you think of the word laughter, I wonder what you think of. I think of a discussion I was having with my husband recently where we were talking about some really hard things, some really scary things for me, some really sad things from my early story that were affecting me. And right in the middle of it, we started laughing about something. And there was a lightness that came and a trust that came that this story was being worked out and it was going to be okay. So anyway, they had laughter. And Sarah was in the position to... We're looking at Sarah and Abraham and we're seeing that they were trying to make this thing work out for them themselves. They were trying to take hold. And Paul in Galatians calls that the law. They were living under the law. I make myself worthy. I make myself worthy of this inheritance. And Hagar was the result. Hagar's and her son were the result. The pain that they went through, this child, were the result of that. And Isaac was the result of God, the result of this promise that happened over here. And Sarah, the next step in her development, which maybe wasn't development, she was really hoarding that laughter. She was saying, this is for me. And so the way I know that is that Ishmael, who was 13 at the time, and in the chapter before, all the men had been circumcised, and I kind of was laughing, thinking, I bet Ishmael was like, why couldn't you have sent us out into the wilderness before this? It's kind of like, you know, it's a bummer, God. But he was included, which is actually really important. And one day, Ishmael was laughing at Isaac. I imagine Isaac was a little toddler because it says he was weaned. And Ishmael laughed at him and Sarah said, that's it. I want them out of here now. And she went to Abraham and she said, I want you to get rid of that woman and I want you to get rid of her son. He has no place in this inheritance. He has no place in the line of your children. And Abraham was crushed because he loved Ishmael. And he was crushed because he was like, I had been planning that this was the place where my name would go. And now you're taking it away. So he said to God, what else can we do? And God said, don't be afraid to do this. I want you to take her out and send her on her way and trust me. And so Abraham put a skin of water on her shoulder and he gave her some bread and he sent Hagar and Ishmael away. Lots of triggers right here. Lots of hard stuff for me. I don't like this story at this point. I don't like that God told them to go, that God told Abraham to send them away. I don't like the way Sarah's behaving. I don't like it in this part of the story. It's uncomfortable. But let's look at what happened next. So, Hagar and Ishmael wandered. And I looked at where they wandered on a map. I actually saw the well of Abraham, and if you zoom in on it on Google Maps, there's an IKEA not far away and a Domino's right next to it. So kind of takes the, I don't know, ancientness out of it, doesn't it? But I looked and it was about a 13-hour walk. And so they had been walking and walking, and at this point they were out of water. And at this point, Hagar was in despair. And she went and she laid her son under a bush, and she pulled a little ways away to not see him die, honestly. And let's pick this up here. When the water was in the skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, let me not look on the death of the child. And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy, Ishmael. God hears. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Up, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him a great nation." Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. The living water. So, oh man, what does this mean? Like, if you read further, it says that he grew up and he lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. Kind of a little fun fact popped into the story. And he lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Glenn was asking me about that. He's like, wow, the mother went and got a wife for him. Kind of interesting. The arranged marriages of the day. But so why did Ishmael land in this story when he's not the chosen one in the chosen line, but he is the chosen one in a way? And what is God about, and what is God doing in this story? Now, you may not know, or you may know, that Ishmael is considered to be the father of the Islam, of the Muslim people. And that there had been conflict between the children of Isaac and the children of Ishmael till now. Right now, there's conflict between them. And actually, the other beautiful thing that I saw when I was looking at it is, and I put this in the title, this matches so beautifully with the story of Jesus with the woman at the well. She was a Samaritan, an outcast, not part of the promised line. What is going on? Why is Jesus going to these two women in this beautiful matchup in the Bible? And these two stories of women who are waiting to be filled with living water. And maybe they think they don't deserve it. And one of the things that I came to is this idea that Sarah had this all wrong. She felt like this promise was for her and for Abraham alone. But Isaac was the one whom the angel of the Lord would enter into that line and go all the way down and would die for all the people. And so Ishmael was very important in this story. It was very important that Hagar and Ishmael be seen, because Isaac's line was invited to die for their brother, invited to be a part of this redemption of their brother, not to fight them, not to push them out, not to hoard the promise. And in some ways, I feel like Ishmael and Hagar, they represent all of us who are wondering, are we seen? And is there a purpose to this story for us? You know, one of the things maybe Sarah missed was that God said, "Through you, Abraham, all the nations of the earth will be blessed." What did that mean to Abraham? What does that mean to God? I believe it means that through him comes the Messiah. And the woman at the well, she was able to name that and see that, wasn't she? She was the first one that Jesus told he was the Messiah. She was the first one to know that, another first. And he went to the outcast first. So I wanted to talk a little bit just about this seeing and put it into a little bit of context for us in the current space we're in, with the story we're living, with the hard days we're in. Because these are hard days. These are hard days for our world. These are hard days for our country. These may be hard days for us. And what is the purpose of all of it? When he says, "I'm going to stay with you in it," Jesus says, "I'm here with you. I see you here." And he doesn't fix it. He doesn't stop all the things. And we could sit and have a long discussion about why that is. But I want to really just notice what it is when we stay present with what's uncomfortable. And one of the things that I learned in my counseling teaching was this idea that when we're with someone, we always must have one foot in the place they are authentically. We must authentically feel what they feel, and one foot in what we know about development and humans and love and life at the same time. And I think that that's very much a Hagar, Ishmael, and Isaac thing. So that God is always working with the seeing us and hearing us and being present to us, and then he's laughing. And the only way I could think of to like talk about this in a way that illustrates it well, to go back to the Lord of the Rings, I can't help it. It's just always there. But mainly to the character of Tom Bombadil, and I think I've shared this before, but I'll share it again because it's really meaningful. That's Tom Bombadil, by the way, an illustration of him. In the story of the Lord of the Rings, we don't know, people have argued for a long time, why is Tom Bombadil in this story? If you know the story, you know it's a story about a group of hobbits and there's a ring. I have a little fidget ring. I'm pretending like it's the One Ring. And there's a ring that they have to get to the fires of Mordor to destroy it. It's evil. If you put the ring on, you turn invisible. But when you turn invisible, you're immediately accessible by Sauron. And he gets a hold on you, and he begins to kind of, his talons are in you. And also, it's really a ring everybody wants. Everybody's trying to get this ring, too. And so in the story, everyone who is a part of getting this ring to Mordor doesn't even want to touch it. They're just like, ah, just keep it away from me, especially like Gandalf. Gandalf, the wise wizard, who he's right in the story with everyone. He could get out of the story. He came from somewhere else he could go to, but he stays in the story with them, and he's in the whole process and even dies at one point for this story to keep moving. But Tom Bombadil, he's in the very beginning, and at one point the hobbits go to hang out with him and in his house, and he feeds them good food and there's lots of good music, and at one point he looks at Frodo and he says, Frodo, I'd like to hold the ring. And Frodo's like, okay. And so he gives it to him, and Tom Bombadil throws it in the air. I've tried this like 3 or 4 times and I never catch it, so I'm not going to throw it in the air. But but he throws it in the air and he catches it and he laughs and he looks at it and then he hands it back, and he hasn't been touched by it. It does nothing to him. And it does nothing to him, I think, because he knows the end of the story. He knows what love does in us and what love is doing. And he's not afraid. And I want to put to you today that God is with us in our story. He's with us in our pain, and he knows where we're going, and he knows what love is doing in us. And the more love does what it's doing in us, the more he does in us what he is doing, the more free we become, the more alive we become, the more present we become, even in the middle of the worst disaster you could imagine. So I want to play that song again, but before I do, I want to tell you what it means. And it's really beautiful. The song is called Ndi Kokele, and it's basically saying, lead me, O Father. That word bawo, bawo, bawo is the word for father. The word bapa is the word for papa. You might have guessed that. And it says, Father, I thank you for you still protect me. Lead me, O Father, lead me to my heritage in distress. And I think that's perfect for our sermon because what Sarah didn't realize is that we are all a part of the heritage that Isaac was bringing. We are all brought in to this story, and it is our heritage. Okay, so let's hear that song one more time.
And so the story that he's writing must have felt pretty bleak on the night he was betrayed. But on the night he was betrayed, Jesus took bread and he broke it. And he said, "This is my body broken for you. Whenever you eat of it, do it in remembrance of me. For I have come that you might have life and have it abundantly." And in the same way, he took the cup and he said, "This is my blood of the new covenant poured out for the forgiveness of sins. Whenever you drink of it, do it and remember me. Remember that I love you, that I came for you." And I invite you to come forward today and drink and take and eat and remember that you are seen and heard and that there is a larger story of laughter all around you, in which God is redeeming the world. And he invites you from this table to the ministry of reconciliation. He invites you then, once you've seen him and named him and saw yourself rightly, to then see those around you and to see that they are a part of his heritage. That was the one. That was the one. I was listening to Will's practicing before, and that was the song that I couldn't remember the song that I was like, "Oh, that fits perfectly with today." And that is it, the promises. And this is about the promises of God, and they feel impossible, but they are going to come to pass. And he's laughing because he sees that. So the benediction I have for you, because it's really hard, and so often I am like Sarah. I try to make this happen for myself, or I leave people out of the promise. And because I'm growing. And also, I want to say this is a benediction for the ways we feel afraid right now and the ways we are in distress, to call us to remember our heritage. And to that I say again, I said this the last sermon, from my favorite Chronicle of Narnia, this last battle, King Tyrion says to Jill, "Take courage, we are all between the paws of the true Aslan." And so the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and give you peace. The Lord be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace forever. And I said, as I said to my kids when I was tucking them in and sang that song, his face is already toward you. Bless you.